I think it's been said that we all march to a different drummer, that we have different hopes, desires, influences, and some of these influences has to do with our age, the songs that we like to hear. I am amongst the older here. Norman's a couple of years older than I, but we're close. And so the songs we like to hear were what was popular in the 40s. There's lots of good songs and new ones, of course. And there were songs back in the 40s that didn't amount to much. Mares it oats and does it oats and whatever that stood for. It's a nice little rhyme, but it doesn't make much sense. And the three little fishes that swam and swam all over the dam or something. The younger generation, and that's younger than me, they have a little different group of songs that they like to hear. And still yet younger generation, a little bit different set even so. And then the teenagers of now, and I don't really see very many teenagers here this morning. I see absolutely zero, of course. But they still have somewhat different songs than what we're used to hearing. Though there was always some beautiful songs in any time. And especially those that would be of the hymn nature. I don't know just when the song "How Great Thou Art" was written. I'm confident it was not around when I was a kid. It's only been in fairly recent years that I remember hearing it, so I'm going to assume that it's 20 years old or less, but I don't know whether it is or not. A wonderful song in itself. Wonderful sermon in itself, what I'm trying to say. There's been a song that's been on my mind for the last month or so, and it is a hymn. I don't find it in our book, but Almost Persuaded. And you know, many of us have sung it and we've heard it. And I think we've learned to kind of enjoy it, appreciate it. And yet, how horrible a song it really is. Because it reflects someone that almost, but didn't. Almost, but didn't. And many of our songs, of course, are taken from scriptures. The song that we sang this morning, Work for the Night is Coming. That made me do a lot of thinking while we were singing that. And Bob commented on his thoughts also about the song. Mine were somewhat different than his, and yet they were alike too. My difference was that when the song was written, apparently everybody worked during the day and slept during the night. But when I first went to the city to work, I found that didn't know the whole world do that way. I went to work at the Ford, and they sent me to school for about a month, 6 weeks, which was a day. And then as we was about to get through the school, some of the boys that seemed to be a little more up to date with what's going on than me, some of them said they hope they got the night shift, and others said they hope they got the day shift. Well, I began to hear that kind of talk, and I thought, surely they're not going to ask me to today. I'm in good shape. Surely they're not going to ask me to work at night. But they did. We were working 10-hour days, and 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, and then 8 hours on Saturday. That was short. That's a snap, you know, just an 8-hour day. It was nothing after you'd been working 10-hour days. Then this 10-hour day, night shift started about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, because the day shift had to get their 10 hours in ahead of you. So it was mostly the morning. And I thought, boy, whoever wrote this didn't understand the world today. At the time it was written, they understood it. And it was, but the important part is that it is, and I don't know the word, similitude. If Christ was saying it, we'd call it a parable, I believe. It's something that we should know about when making reference to that which is something we don't know about. Spiritual things, the life that we have, and the time that we have to prepare for the night or for the end, prepare for the next day, which is when after the resurrection. It's a time for us to prepare for that. And it does a wonderful job of that. It's a wonderful song. But I thought, boy, they didn't know about Ford and General Motors and some of these other companies that has as many people working at night as they do at daytime. Well, I'll turn to in Acts to the 26th chapter. And this is, I'm going to put one of these in another pocket. That's going to bother me with two of them. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Thou art permitted to speak for thyself. Then Paul stretched forth his hand and answered for himself. Paul had been taken captive because he was preaching Christ, and the Jews didn't like it. I think myself happy, King Agrippa, because I shall answer for myself this day before thee, touching all the things whereof I am accused of the Jews, especially because I know thee to be expert in all the customs and questions which are among the Jews. Wherefore I beseech you thee to hear me patiently. My manner of life from my youth, which was at the first among mine own nation at Jerusalem, knew me from the beginning. I think I skipped the line or something. My manner of life from my youth, which was at the first among mine own nations at Jerusalem, know all the Jews, which knew me from the beginning, if they would testify that after the most straitest sect of our religion, I lived a Pharisee. That was his religion before he was struck blind. That was what he was following, and he was very devout in it, and he was very determined in his persecution of the Christians. And now I stand and am judged for the hope of the promise made of God to our fathers, unto which promise our 12 tribes instantly serving God day and night hope to come, for which hope's sake, King Agrippa, I am accused of the Jews. Why should it be thought a thing incredible with you that God should raise the dead? See, Christ had been resurrected, and he was teaching and preaching that, and the Jews didn't want to hear that. That wasn't part of their religion. I verily thought with myself that I ought to do many things contrary to the name of Jesus of Nazareth, which thing I also did in Jerusalem, and many of the saints did I shut up in prison, having received authority from the chief priest, and when they were put to death, I gave them my voice against them. And I punished them oft in every synagogue, and compelled them to blaspheme, and being exceedingly mad against them, I persecuted them even unto strange cities. Whereupon, as I went to Damascus with authority and commission from the chief priest, at midday, O king, I saw in the way a light from heaven above the brightness of the sun, shining round about me and them which journeyed with me. And when we were all fallen to the earth, I heard a voice speaking unto me and saying in the Hebrew tongue, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? Is it hard for thee to kick against the pricks? That's not is it, it is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And I said, Who art thou, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus whom thou persecutest. So as devout a man he was, as a Pharisee, when the Lord showed him that this was Jesus, he then turned, as we all know, and was a very devout Christian then, teaching Christ. But rise and stand upon thy feet, for I have appeared unto thee for this purpose, to make thee a minister. He wasn't only going to be a follower, but he was going to be a minister. And of course, as we all know, apostle. And a witness, both of these things which thou hast seen, and of those things in the which I will appear unto thee. Deliver me from the people and from the Gentiles, unto whom now I send thee, to open their eyes, to turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan unto God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and inheritance among them which are sanctified by faith that is in me. Whereupon, O King Agrippa, I was not disobedient unto the heavenly vision. Christ got his attention, and he was not disobedient. He followed, and he did. But showed first unto them of Damascus and at Jerusalem and throughout all the coasts of Judea, and then to the Gentiles, that they should repent and turn to God and do works meet for repentance. For these causes the Jews caught me in the temple and went about to kill me. Having therefore obtained help of God, I continue unto this day, witnessing both to small and great, saying none of the things than those which the prophets and Moses did say should come. that Christ should suffer and that he should be the first that should rise from the dead and should show light unto the people and to the Gentiles. And as he thus spake for himself, Festus said with a loud voice, Paul, thou art beside thyself. Much learning doth make thee mad. But he said, I am not mad, most noble Festus, but speak forth the words of truth and soberness. For the king knoweth of these things, before whom also I speak freely. For I am persuaded that none of these things are hidden from him, for this thing was not done in a corner. King Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? I know that thou believest. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. After that almost persuaded song that run through my mind for a few weeks, I guess, and I knew that almost persuaded was come from the Bible. And so I went to my computer and I asked it where it was, and it said it wasn't such a thing as almost persuaded, which means that you need to be pretty exact in your wording. Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. So I give up and said, well, persuade. And then it come up. I found it easy enough here in Acts. I realize that there are none here this morning except a few wee little ones that have not already been persuaded to be a Christian. But we have in our midst from time to time those that have not. And sometimes I think maybe they are almost persuaded. But it didn't do anything for Agrippa. And it wasn't doing anything for us or for those that are amongst us that almost were persuaded but really didn't quite do it. And Paul said, I would to God that not only thou, but also all that hear me this day, and we're talking about today as well, but Paul was talking about that day, were both almost and altogether, such as I am, except these bonds. Well, he was restrained, handcuffed or something. I don't know what they used to restrain with in those days, but he was restrained, and but he wished everybody was like him, except he really didn't want them to be restrained or in bond, except these bonds. And when he had thus spoken, the king rose up, and the governor, and Bernice, and they that sat with him. And when they were gone aside, they talked between themselves, saying, This man doeth nothing worthy of death or of bonds. Then said Agrippa unto Festus, This man might have been set at liberty if he had not appealed unto Caesar. Now, you know, Caesar, that's Rome. That's the Romans. And Paul was both a Jew and a Roman. So he had the, it's sort of like we being a Church of Christ and an American citizen, and in lots of places, if you feel that you're not being treated justly, well, you can be asked for judgment by our own government rather than by some other government where we might be when we had a problem. And Paul had asked for judgment from the Roman government, or as the words are, if he had not appealed unto Caesar. Back to chapter 9, and I might have should have gone to chapter 9 first, who knows. And Paul, yet breathing out threatening and slaughter against the disciple of the Lord, went unto the high priest and desired of him letters to Damascus, to the synagogues, that if he found any of this way, whether they were men or women, he might bring them bound into Jerusalem. And as he journeyed, he came near Damascus. And suddenly there shined around about him a light from heaven. And he fell to earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And he trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And the Lord said unto him, Arise, and go into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou must do. And the men which journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no man. And Saul arose from the earth when his eyes were opened, and saw no man. But they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. He opened his eyes, but he couldn't see. He was blind. And he was there 3 days without sight, and neither did eat nor drink. And there was a certain disciple at Damascus named Ananias. And to him said the Lord in a vision, Ananias? And he said, Behold, I am here, Lord. And the Lord said unto him, Arise, and go into the street which is called Straight, and inquire in the house of Judas for one called Saul of Tarsus. For behold, he prayeth. And he hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in and putting his hand on him that he might receive his sight. My, what an opportunity Ananias had here, able to do that which the Lord would ask him to do and help him receive his sight. After a fashion, it might seem like a real joyous time for Ananias, but rather than that, he was pretty badly scared. Then Ananias answered, Lord, I have heard by many of this man how much evil he hath done to thy saints at Jerusalem. And here he hath authority from the chief priest to bind all that call on thy name. Well, Ananias was a little apprehensive, needless to say, because he didn't know the conversion. And I've heard Alan testify and Romy. They didn't persecute the church, but they had changed their life. They had become convicted persuaded that they should be Christians. And the people that they worked with, at least for a few days, probably, maybe for some time, didn't quite understand that there was a changed person there. And then Ananias didn't understand that this was a changed person. But the Lord said to him, "Go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me, to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel. For I will show him how great things he must suffer for my name's sake." And Ananias went his way and entered into the house, and putting his hands on him, said, "Brother Saul, he called him brother, from the faith of what Christ had told him to do, because he didn't know other than from that he had made any change. The Lord, even Jesus, that appeared unto thee in the way as thou camest, has sent me, that thou mightest receive thy sight and be filled with the Holy Ghost." And immediately there fell from his eyes as it had been scales, and he received sight forthwith and rose and was baptized. And when he had received meat, he was strengthened. Then was Saul certain days with the disciples which were in Damascus. And straightway he preached Christ at the synagogues, that he is the Son of God. And he had had no teachings of Christ to depend on for his preaching, but only his knowledge, because of the miracle that had been performed for him, that he had heard the voice of the Lord and to say that it was Jesus Christ. Paul had a hard time for a while because many just couldn't believe that he could persecute the church so heavily for so long and then all of a sudden not persecute. But it was that way. And then, as I read first, after he was taken into custody and was accused of preaching blasphemous things that would be against God, when really it wasn't, he was very much doing the will of God. And when he's talking to King Agrippa, trying to tell him why he did what he did, and saying that it wasn't done in a dark corner, that everybody that wanted to know about it, at least, could know about it. It wasn't hidden. And knowing that King Agrippa would have to know about it, he asked him if he didn't believe. And King Agrippa said that, "Almost persuaded. Almost thou persuadest me." But in my understanding, and as we discussed in Sunday school this morning, what the Lord would do, what God does, we have no control. But of what we can understand, what we can read and understand, he was lost. Many times we maybe kind of know what we ought to do. I'm talking again, those who have not yet been persuaded, those who have not yet been obedient. And I know that there are none here today, again, except the little children, that have not already made that commitment. We don't know how much time there is left for people to make their commitment. There may be 10 years that it could be done, and tomorrow might be too long. Because when the time comes, it will be over. I'd like to go now to the 11th chapter of John. And this is the story of Lazarus. Now, a certain man was sick named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sister sent him unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Sometimes we have things that face us that we feel like is horrible. We can't stand, we can't bear. But sometimes I believe that those things come upon us that we can learn to be stronger with God. This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. When he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days until in the same place where he was. Then after that saith he to his disciples, let us go unto Judea again. Fiddled around for 2 days till he hurried up there and see if he couldn't keep him from dying. His disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in a day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that which he had... These things said he, and after that he had... That he saith unto them, our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Howbeit Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest in sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there. He was glad he wasn't there. He peddled around 2 days, even starting, because he wanted it to be shown that it was a true miracle, that it wasn't that he could have been got well by his own self or whatever. I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Then said Thomas, which was called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, Let us also go, that we may die with him. Well, they wasn't sure what's going to happen to Christ when he went back to the Jews. They thought he'd be stoned, and so they'll go along with him, and if they're killed, why, they'll just die with him. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days. Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. I don't know what a furlong is, something like a quarter of a mile, I think, or a little more. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary was still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. She had enough faith to think that if he'd been there, that he wouldn't have let him die. But she thought all was lost even so. But I know that even now, whatever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus said unto her, Thy brother shall rise again. Well, you know, they have a little trouble understanding what the meanings of these words are sometimes. Up here a while ago, he said that he slept, and he's really talking about it being dead. And they thought, well, if he's just sleeping, that's no big deal. That's well. He said, no, I mean he's really dead. And here he says, He will rise again. Martha said unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Well, we also are looking forward to such as that. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. I think that still has to do with the resurrection. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? She said to him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary, her sister, secretly, saying, The Master is come and calleth for thee. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha met him. I think you'd have to say that Jesus was imitating a little kid. Peddled around 2 days before he started, and then when he went, he didn't go on a long run. He poked along, because Martha went out to meet him and went back, and Mary went out to meet him, and he still hadn't got there. But there was a reason, a very good reason, that he could show a miracle that they could not deny. You know, I never doubted the miracles that were recorded in the scriptures, Bible, Book of Mormon too, but the Bible I'm talking about here now specifically. But I spent an evening out on a ramp around airplanes, waiting for a certain airplane to come in. And there was another man, same job that I had, out there with me. And some way we got into a religious discussion. Now this was a Catholic man, long since dead now. We went to his funeral, Betty and I did. But he told me that he didn't really believe those miracles that was in the Bible. That when they said, how can you know that they weren't already on the mend, that they were going to get well anyway, that those things really didn't happen? And this really shocked me, because I thought anybody that claimed to be any semblance of a Christian would believe all the things like that that was recorded. But he'd been taught otherwise. The Jews then, which were with her in the house and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out. It said that Martha spoke to her quietly, I believe it was. Must have whispered to her that Christ was coming. So she jumped up and ran out. She rose up hastily and went out. They followed her, saying, she goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then when Mary was come there, where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet and saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. Both of the sisters believed, and I think truthfully, rightfully believed, if Christ had been there, they probably wouldn't have died, because Christ could have kept them from dying. But even greater was the fact that he was going to resurrect him. No, not resurrect him. He's going to bring him back to life. Not a resurrection, but just bring him back to life. Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, hope I'm back to going next verse. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled, and said, where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. And all the grief of the people round about bore upon Christ. And he wept. Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, behold, how he loved him. And some of them said, could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died? Jesus, therefore, again groaned himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, take ye away the stone, Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. Jesus said unto her, said I not unto thee, that if thou wouldst believe, thou shouldst see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. And I know that thou hearest me always, but because of the people which stand by, I said it. For the benefit of the people that stood by, Christ thanked God, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave cloths, and his face was bound with a napkin. Jesus said unto them, Loose him, let him go. What a wonderful day. What a wonderful what a wonderful time. And the Spirit was high, and many believed. Then many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things which Jesus did, believed on him. But some of them went their ways to the Pharisees and told them what things had been done. Even be their eyewitness to the raising of the dead by the Lord himself was not enough to convince. Not enough to make them believe. Not enough to persuade, almost persuaded, but not enough. They saw, but still not enough. So they, I don't know just why I have had the urge to speak on that for some little time. The fact that we are so precariously to the point of being persuaded or not being persuaded, and again, I understand that we are all persuaded here this morning. But we have loved ones, all of us do. Not just one of us, but I don't think there's anyone here that doesn't have loved ones that would like to see them persuaded. And I'm sorry that a lot could not be here. But they have chose otherwise, of course, or at least mostly so. But back to the songs for just a second, and I'll turn you loose. One of the songs that I remembered, and now all of a sudden the name's gone. Kathleen. I'll take you home again, Kathleen. What's back in the Pilgrim times, as I understand it. And Kathleen had came with her husband to this country. And she was not very happy. She was very, very sad. She was far from home. And in the song, he's promising to take her home when the spring comes. But the spring never came for her. The time for us to do that which we need to do if you're not careful, it may not ever come for us. We may put it off and put it off and put it off till it's everlastingly too late. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. That's a powerful sermon. And it's, I wish that there were a lot of people that I can think of that I wish were here to have heard those selection of words. Let us turn now to hymn number 192 to close our service this morning. And for those who, some that were not here when I read the announcements earlier, the Ice Cream Social has been postponed indefinitely, and there will be a meeting at the Christian Church, is it not, Jack?
And Terry knows one day, I don't know.
I assume the reason why it was postponed was to that the Christian Church meeting.
I think so.
I'm sure we will. We will resume that probably within the next week or two later.
But we'll announce this when, as soon as we know, we'll announce it. But the 5th, 6th, and 7th, there will be meetings at the Collins Christian Church, and you all are invited there at 7 o'clock in the evening. And you might keep that in mind, and also don't give up hope on this ice cream idea. It's going to work. 192, we found our places. Let us rise.
Thank you.